Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Online Voices. I'm your host, Herb Glenn. It's a distinguished pleasure to be able to have an opportunity once again to share ideas and methods of being able to communicate in the trending technology that's available to us, especially at the cost that we have to pay for it. It isn't a good idea to waste it and not use it when we have so much to use it for. And I'm particularly proud of what is happening in the open arena that we have an opportunity to be able to take advantage of. Now that there are a number of individuals that have been able to identify with what we're offering here with our nonprofit organization, We Care Partners, and our effort building relationships United for Peace and developing strong ideas that can be able to help change the type of problems that are going on in our community. It doesn't start early. It's not simple. And it isn't a task that is going to happen immediately. We have been in the vineyard working on this particular issue at least for the last 10 years. And we're very happy to say that we think that we're almost at the point where we're going to see some real major results. Tonight's issue, from Black on Black to Black Lives Matter, Who Really Cares, really focuses on the spike in domestic violence, which has increased over the past decade. From Black on Black to Black Lives Matter, Black Americans are losing their lives to senseless crimes. What can we do to stop this genocide? What is being done to make the difference? Well, we can talk about what we would want to be able to recognize as what we need to do. But before we can talk about what we need to do, we have to talk about what isn't being done. And one of the things that we believe that's not being done is that we're not identifying to the real problem. We have been given a number of different obstacles to be able to find a method of delivering the changes that are necessary for our communities. But consistently, over and over again, we find the same problems that we are unable to control. If you take a look at some of the statistics that are going on, especially in foreign countries, the number of deaths have risen as well. It seems as if in most of the countries that have that kind of animosity going on, we would hear more. But unfortunately, because of politics and the suppression of a number of different ways in which those controlled environments have a relationship with communications, we only really see what goes on in our own little vineyard. And because of that, it appears as if we're not doing anything to control it. But we can be able to identify to a number of positive things that are occurring to at least qualify a method in which we need to look forward towards making additional improvements. This year, We Care Partners has been very effective in developing strong alliances with different institutions that will help make the difference in our communities. We have often made the case that government can't do it alone. And we have spent a lot of time in our lifestyle depending on government. And when the problems get worse, we blame them for it without really taking on an effort to design and define how we could change that paradigm of failure. Well, tonight, I'm very proud to say that We Care Partners is about to make the effort that many people have been waiting for. One of the things that has been really interesting in terms of to the relationship of behavior in our community is basically targeted at the method of how we relate to one another, which really comes from our history. Our history was built on not trusting one another as African Americans or as American Africans or as Black folk in general. We have had a tough time dealing with each other, and it's by virtue of conditioning. And we have to really look at the reality behind how conditioning actually works, because conditioning is a scientific method. And the theory behind conditioning is about a stimulus, a result of a response to something that might have occurred. And as we begin to look at the relationship of our lifestyles on an intellectual basis, that's just such a commonality of trying to define ways in which we should be able to focus on the negative relationships that we have. But there are a number of positive relationships that we have that we need to begin to really cultivate and find a way to nurture it so that it can make the tremendous change that's important for our community. And that is the relationship of family. Many of us have lost that village concept of survival. We're afraid to even say good morning to some of our neighbors. And that's by virtue of the fact that many of them have had different types of relationships that cause them to not want to feel comfortable or trusting anyone, simply because you don't know what's in somebody's, shall I say, closet. And that is where we are finding a major difficulty in developing ways in which we can be able to find success in community. And we have to begin to look at what do we do, because our communities have grown in a very, very large way. The community that I grew up in was a community and still is a community that is populated with a large number of people. In fact, in probably a square block area, you would have a total population that can be equal to many foreign countries that we listen and watch on TV most of the time, because many of us have not had an opportunity to travel any further than probably to the corner store and back into their homes. We have to begin to think in terms of what the media has exposed to us and what the media does not expose to us. And in most cases, we see a lot of negative things. Most of the drama shows that come on today are shows about what? People who are being killed and how they solve the problems of those people being killed. And so what happens is that you can condition the mindset to believe that if they cover all the bases, they'll never get caught for what they do, which we know is a mundane situation of thought. But there are some people who do have that kind of idea in their mind to believe that they can think better than what the logic of reality can prove. So in many cases, individuals have lost their mind and have found themselves caught up in situations that they regret doing. And in our lifestyles, we do provide redemption in that case. But there are some situations that should not allow any redemption at all, unfortunately, on my behalf, in my belief. I'm not being judgmental. I'm not trying to be anything more than what God has made me to be. But I don't believe that a person should just get away with doing something simply because they thought they made a mistake and they should be given a second chance for it. I think that a person should prove and work to a level of competency and trust to ensure that not only what they may have done wrong has been corrected and they'll never do it again, but they have been able to accept the fact that they are not really going to get the same privileges that everyone else gets simply because they did the wrong thing. And we have to justify a relationship of knowing how to make people aware that there is punishment when you do something wrong, and not a method of being able to be given any kind of way of allowing your lifestyles to continue after you've hurt someone, and especially members of other families, in regard to your livelihood and the things that you have done. I am just that way, and that's the way I feel. I don't think it's right, and I don't think it's fair for those of us who live by the rule of God and who respect life have to have a tremendous burden to believe that because someone who did not want to respect that level of freedom, our lifestyles, to justify it as a manner of saying that they can now be able to achieve greater levels of survival, of income, of relationships in their lifestyles simply because of that. Hello? Oh, I think my system is not working properly. Am I online? Hello? Hello? Am I online? Wow!
Hello?
Hey, hello, everybody. Wow. My sister hung up on me. How is everybody doing?
I'm good. Can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me? My sister hung up. I'm talking to myself and trying to figure out what's going on. Everybody in there?
Hello.
Hi, who's on the line?
Hello.
Yeah.
How are you?
Hello, can you hear me?
Hey,
Mr. Kirby, how you doing? Sharon? Hello? Can you hear me?
This is Minister Ellis.
Hey, Minister Ellis, how you doing this evening?
All right, so you can hear me, I can hear you.
And I can hear you too,
yes,
Mr. Ellis.
Thank you.
Oh, okay, great. Kirby and Ellis, and who else is on the line with us? Who else?
Sounds like
well,
Sharon.
Well, I'm very happy that we were able to have an opportunity where we can have a discussion. We did find a technical glitch. My computer started hanging. I had no idea until I logged on to another computer. So we're very happy about having redundant technology to be able to make sure that we can overcome some of these obstacles. How you gentlemen are doing? You know, Mr. Kirby, what's going on?
Man, I'm doing great, man. It's good to hear you and Mr. Ellis again. I told you already I was waiting to do something else with both of you guys.
Oh, absolutely. And we're very happy that you have been able to stay in the vineyard, and we've been keeping an eye on you, and you're doing some phenomenal work. So, you know, it's really going to be phenomenal for us now for this year to find a way in which we can now unite towards the same effort and find ways in which we can use those experiences in a method that's going to help generate a difference in people's lives. Mr. Ellis, how are you doing this evening?
Hey, I'm doing good. I'm just sitting here listening in and excited about another show. And I can say this, what can we do? That's a good question. But here's a solution to your question. We can get more involved. We can safeguard our community. We can work and to have a better community and police relationship. And most of all, we can come together. If we can do all of that, then we can solve a lot of our problems.
I agree with that.
And looking at it from that that perspective, wow. Where do we need to begin to start?
open dialogue.
Okay.
Open, honest dialogue.
Has that been effective in what you have been doing? You have made a major improvement in terms of your visibility and touching the lives of others. Why don't you share with us exactly what you have been able to achieve? And I'm very happy, and I want to congratulate you on your new certification that you have been sharing with us. But talk to us, Brother Kirby, what is it that you know that is working that we can use to prove that, you know, we really care about the relationship of black on black and that black lives matter?
The one thing is the labels. We keep getting into these labels with our people. And we got to take off the labels, because when you put labels out like Black Lives Matter to who? Black lives always matter to blacks. So who is this slogan targeted to? Is it targeted to blacks? When we have taken on the mindset of the ones who used to kill us? So what are we talking about? Is Black Lives Mattering to who? Because we always cared about each other. What's happening is the inconsistency of the care and the love. We don't become so separated with this technology and everything that there's no human touch, there's no human emotions, there's no nothing. Everything is a text, a video, a chat, and that's what's happening. We have to get back to those things that brought us this far. We didn't get this way. We didn't get this far as a race by texting and by Instagrams. We got this way because we cared and we communicated. We don't communicate no more because it's so much of a pointing of a finger in judgment that there's no communication. Like I posted today, I said, we all got something to complain about, but let's not complain. And what are you willing to change? We can complain about how the community is, but what part are we willing to play? Are we going to just continue to ride by when we see these little kids out here smoking cigarettes and blacking mouths? We're going to just keep on riding by and say, come on now, you know if your mother was here, she wouldn't approve of that. That's the generation I came up in. You got it from your next door neighbor. You got it from the lady down the street. You got it. We don't have those type of communities no more. And that's what made Black Lives Matter then. So what's been working for me is the honesty and the consistency. These young people know when I come, I'm honest and I'm consistent in their lives. I'm not coming just for no book bag giveaway or no block party. So these are some of the things we need to really look at and start coming together with. It ain't about whether you the president or this person is just a regular joke. How can we work together? Because these kids are dying. Our community is so torn apart. If we don't come together with people like us who have the knowledge of this and put aside some of our other differences, it's not going to happen. So that's what's really been working for me.
Let me ask you, Mr. Ellis, when it comes down to looking at it from the perspective of community and looking at it, you know, we often say, you know, it takes a village to raise a child. We still see that there is a disparity in regard to the outlook of family. We can honestly look at this domestic issue that is very troubling. I mean, and not that there aren't, it's not to pick one, to say the least, but, I mean, it's very troubling for this last issue of a young lady who gets shot and by her ex-boyfriend in front of her kids and was really trying to find help and unable to get the help that she needed. How do we identify with that?
Well, you know, too many times we hear of instances that happen, such as possibly this nature. But the real issue is when the community stands up, okay? And that's what's not happening in many of our neighborhoods. Our people aren't standing up. Give you a perfect example. Last week it was the snowstorm. And because the plow didn't come, people started coming out and helping their neighbor, shoveling and plowing and coming together. But when you're talking crime and violence, a lot of people don't want to come together. And that's the problem. You know, one of the things that I always like to say is people can say it takes a village to raise a child, but it takes warriors in the village. And until we get back to the warrior in the village concept, we can say it takes a village to raise a child, but you have to have warriors. And I say this time and time again. The warrior is the one who safeguards the community. The warrior is the one when he hears that drumbeat of trouble will come and warn you. The warrior is the one who will keep all the craziness out of that village so that the children can be raised in the village. And so until we get some warriors back, we have enough preachers and apostles and community activists and leaders, but where is the warrior? Because our community needs protection. And we understand the police have their job that they do. But as a community, it has to be where there is a close-knit group of people who are the elders and those who understand community and pass that on to the young people so that they can grow in the community. We're seeing more children die in the community almost than we are seeing grow up in the community.
Do one of you guys have listening to it on the radio as well? Because I hear some noise in the background.
No, I don't have it. Look, I barely got PSE&G. So I know you ain't hearing nothing about me. I got my lights on. You might have heard the light switch go off. That was it.
It's probably my system. But the thing that really is clear is that what is the definition of a warrior, and how do we provide for that kind of a discipline of leadership in our community in this day and age? Can you guys give me an answer on that?
Well, the definition of a warrior is somebody who's going to fight for your community.
Well, I think, how do we provide for, how do we provide that strategy or that theory or that leadership council that's going to do that?
This is how we provide it, all right? In every neighborhood, in every community, you have someone who have a highly skilled education. Somebody that went to college and got a master's. Somebody that went to college got a doctorate. Somebody that went to college got their PhD. These are the people who have to come back and give back. Okay? Education is what's important. Right about now, whenever we hear of two people shot in a car or New Street, a body found on Stratford Place, a 21-year-old found in a bathtub, a suspect caught in the early morning stabbing. I think lack of education is the problem. And so we need people to come back into the community who are doctors, lawyers, philanthropists, or construction owners, people who own their own business, and really talk to the community and let them know that they too can be something other than a killer, on the run, a drug dealer, a player. This is what our people think that they can be, because what they see is what they'll be. So how do we get the Warriors. The Warriors are out there, but they got to come back into the village.
Kirby?
That's
Kirby,
you still here? Yes, I'm here. You hear me?
Yeah. Now, what was that you were saying? Yeah, I can
hear
you.
That's probably interesting that you will say that they will come back into the community, but see, they will come back into the community and do what? Because once you leave the community, you're no longer a part of the community. And that's what the problem is becoming, because when they leave the community, it's like, okay, I made it, so I'm not going back. I worked hard and struggled hard to get away from that garbage. I'm not going back to that garbage and help them. I could be wrong. But from what I've been witnessing, a lot of people, once they make it now, they don't look back because they forgot what the struggle was. They be like, man, I got my house, I got my wife, our family live in a nice, secure area. I'm not going back to North unless I have to work in North.
Well, now, that's the point that I just said. That's the problem.
How do we get past that?
Well, they know where they came from. Huh? We're talking Black History, right? This is Black History Month. Now, check this out. Black History Month is about educating the young people about their history. Huh? If we don't do that, we can't fault other people for not teaching our history.
That's true.
So we can get the same people again. We have to get them to come back into the community.
But when they come back to the community, even if it's for the education purposes, this is what I'm saying with the generation today. They're tired of people just coming and going. Now they're gonna come back to the community, educate us or educate the youth, educate me, anyone else, or our struggles, our oppressions and everything, and then they're gone.
Well, here's the thing, Doc. You ever heard of alumni?
Yes.
All right. Do you know in most communities, maybe not in Newark per se, but in other cities, it's the alumni, people who went to the school, graduated, and came back and give back to help to keep the community safe and informed and all that. Alumni.
Exactly. I like that. So, can we work? That'll be in the works. That right there will be a workable thing. I think that will be a workable thing. To build up the Warriors. I like that concept better than anything. Let's develop alumni of successful men and women to come back into the community, and that will be not just a fly by night, but will be consistent with it because they're part of the alumni. So they have an invested interest in these people succeeding. Not no just, oh, here goes some book bags. School is more than 1 month. 1 month everybody do book bag giveaways and then there's nothing else. Have you ever? I know you noticed that. You got people come from everywhere. Oh, here, let's get these kids some book bags and some school supplies. After the first 2 weeks of school, those school supplies is gone.
Think about it. And when we say that, at one point there was nothing that was given to the kids, and it was the outcry in education that many of the educators were taking money out of their pocket to meet the needs of the kids. And meeting the needs of the kids became a village aspect in that regard that turned into an event that appears to seem to be only for that period of time. But, I mean, we got to look at it from another perspective, in my opinion, where there are some positive elements in regard to its effectiveness, because it did identify to a need that still exists. And I understand when we pick up on one particular need and then allow it to be the transformation that never really fixes the problem. And so we're still struggling in the school system with resources that are necessary for our children to get a better education. And unfortunately, one of the issues that's going on is when our young people physically and experience these traumatic issues in their lifestyles, and then they bring it into the educational system, and since there's no real cultural therapy to be able to identify to where those problems exist and how to deal with them, even in as much articulate them, we have this major problem. Because, I mean, I'm 59 years old this year, so when I'm hearing about these individuals that are struggling and their children are being exposed to traumatic, you think about this young lady and her boyfriend who just got killed. And her babies watched that happen.
Yeah.
Her babies are still going to go to school and have to deal with reality after this situation. There's not going to be no private school these kids are going to go to. Mm. Now, we look at it from a perspective that, yes, this has been a situation that occurred that we all recognize and notice because of the traumatic method in which it happened. But there are a lot of our young kids that are being exposed to these kinds of domestic problems. And it doesn't get to the level of being recognized as a violent crime, but it is.
Well, Herb, now remember I said what they see is what they'll be. That's 100%. Deep. But what's deeper than that is our children are being raised by the environment.
Yes. Right.
So the environment they come out of dictates how they communicate with you, how they respond back to you, the type of attitude they're going to give you, the environment. And so one of the things I stress is public safety. All of this is a public safety issue. But it's deeper than just that one incident. You're right. There's a whole lot of cases that we don't hear about, and children are involved. So, again, the environment helps to shape the minds of our young children. So if all they see is cussing and hitting and slapping and get over here and it's the first of the month, I said this on another radio show, from the first of the month through the seventh of the month, maybe the 8th or 9th, is one of the most violentest times dealing with domestic violence for our community, because the women have that EBT card and their little boyfriends want that card and a little fighters too, or they go get real high or real drunk off the card and now the card's missing. Oh, come on. So 739 is a police code. It ain't no secret. 739 is a police code. That code is for domestic violence and all of that. And from the first of the month through the seventh or eighth of the month, those calls come in very rapidly, all day and all night.
Wow, that's something. Yeah, 739. I think we need to really do a lot of research on that. Go ahead, Brother Kirby.
Yes, and what he's saying is so true, because I go to the school and I speak to the kids, because I say, hold on, I'm doing anger management, and these kids are angry. So how do you expect these kids to learn effectively when they come to school angry about the things that's going on in their home? Their mother got a boyfriend who's abusive, or whatever the case is, and then a lot of these cases where the kids are witnessing the fathers beat up on their mother. So how do we expect these young girls to come to school? How do we expect these young men to come to school when they're looking for a father, all they got is a mother boyfriend? So yeah,
I think now we're beginning to focus on the key issue here and why we're always relating to the issues that are not as relevant as a problem. Because we'll talk about black on black, we'll talk about Black Lives Matter, but we don't talk about the social consciousness that derives these kinds of ways in which we are being really abused by.
Mm-hmm.
Because the real problem is not being addressed. The real problem
you know
is
why?
Not being addressed.
You know why, though, right?
No, I'm listening.
Because there's no economical value to the powers that be. Look at this. Have you ever noticed kids get killed in front of African-American schools every day for the most part? It's some type of shooting or some type of traumatic things go on at the schools or even in the households or even a loved one dies. There is no grief counseling for these students. And this is a fact. These kids not only angry because a parent is lost or they lost a loved one, they're angry because they don't know how to deal with the hurt, so the hurt transfers into anger. And that's why it's so easy for these kids to walk up the street with no, like, it's nothing matters because they're hurting. So we want to get to the root of why our society is like, why our kids are out of control, because they hurt. They're becoming desensitized to death or anything of nature. Because if I'm cursing at you in the household when you come on, shut your dumb blank, blank, blank up. Okay, so it's really easy for you to go to school and do the same cursing and carry on the same behavior if that's what's in your household. But it's in your household because not just because it wants to be in your household, because you're living in a hurt household. We have hurt parents.
Let me understand this here now, though. But you're right. You know, there is a psychological difference in regard to how an affected kid is going to be able to relate to the studies that they're being introduced to and how an individual who has been traumatized is not. Do you think public safety is the answer, though?
It is.
Because
it is a public safety.
Do you think increasing more police officers in our community is going to save this generation?
Nope. Not at all. It's going to make them colder and more distant.
Well, we also got to look at public safety doesn't always come in the law enforcement box. Public safety is parents out there looking to protect and keep themselves and their children safe. That's the warrior. You ask the warrior, that's the warrior. You know, people, remember I said, people who stand up, that's what the warrior do. He stand up. And so public safety is not always the law enforcement in the bottle. Public safety is the community. That's who enforces public safety. Remember, the police department is here to protect and serve. But public safety starts in the home. Public safety starts on your block. Public safety starts on your corner. Public safety starts in your community. And if your community is safe, there's no need for the police to even come in there. So that's tax dollars that you really wouldn't even have to spend because it costs a lot of money for the police to patrol your neighborhood. You know that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So if we can make our community safe, there are certain sections of New York City, me being a Harlemite, there are certain sections in New York City, Brooklyn is the borough, where the police don't even patrol.
Huh? Mm-hmm. Let me bring this to another level, because I like to really talk about this from an intellectual positioning, because that's where we need to go with this. The reality, again, is that we allow government to dictate to us exactly where we need to have the control. And we have pretty much skated a particular issue that we know is the real problem. As you know, that I'm working now with a new involvement And Minister Ellis has gotten on board, and he sees the potential behind it. And what we've been doing is really coming up with a new movement, Turvey. The movement we're focusing on is the middle-class movement, primarily based upon the fact of what it is in regard to those who do flight out of our community once they have reached a level of financial competency. One of the areas that we have been able to identify to in relationship to our studies has been the traumatic syndrome that a lot of people are involved with in the military. And if you parallel the post-traumatic syndrome that many of them have been identified to, and a lot of people in the military are now receiving an extensive amount of funding, primarily based upon their mental capacity being altered in many ways. I mean, the 2001 catastrophe of the World Trade Center really triggered an alarming type of an effect on individuals who are post-war veterans. And the government has done a great deal of investment in trying to help remedy the difficulties that they're having with dealing with day to day. That kind of theory in regard to it being an area of violent disorder is also what we are encountering with our youth in the urban community. Would you agree? And I'm going to put it like this. Our partner Dale Caldwell, he authored some information that was very challenging. Let me just read this really quick. Childhood experiences research on 17,000 Kaiser Permanente patients clearly indicate that traumatic childhood experiences are fundamental reason why individuals do poorly in school and suffer later in life. Research is being done to really identify to what a child goes through when he has been exposed to prolonged trauma.
Well, look, as a veteran, I'm a veteran myself, served in the Air Force. I worked on fighter planes. These are planes that fly over and bomb your whole city and town. And we've seen them in action. I worked on A-10s. I worked on A-7s. I even worked with special operations. The military in itself is about killing. It's about violence. They wanted peace, but their means of getting peace is violence. And we see that every day. That's the military. So if you can imagine, you're out there in the Army or Marines, and you're fighting the enemy, and you're hand-to-hand or close by, or your buddy get his head blown off right there. That's very traumatic. And when you come back home to the States, if you still have your limb, see, a lot of these soldiers come back with one arm, no leg, half a head, missing an eye, missing half of their body. And so you can't get much more traumatic than that. Your brain, what I'm trying to say here, your brain can only handle so much trauma. And your body, I'm a victim of gunshot violence myself. Your body truly understands when it's been penetrated by a foreign object. And sometimes it can cause trauma. So the mind and the brain is where all the trauma is stored. So just imagine, you seeing your buddy shot, your whole platoon killed, you the only one surviving, you out there in the wilderness for 3 days waiting for somebody to find you. That's traumatic. When you come back to the States, you ain't going to be able to just fit back in with people. And there's a mental issue there because you have mentally experienced something that a lot of people haven't. It's how people cope, their coping skills. How do you cope after being in a traumatic experience. That's what we have to focus on, the coping skills.
Exactly. And so my question to you, do you think that the study that we know in relationship to the lifestyles of individuals who have gone through military services, especially in combat, can be applied in the same theory to our kids that are going through a number of different traumatic issues in the, you know, in the urban community?
Well, yeah, absolutely, because guess what? People being shot and killed in a community, that's combat. It's traumatizing. It's no two ways to look. Let me tell you something here. I wrote a piece years ago about terrorists. You know who some of the biggest terrorists are? These cats run around in your community with a 9mm and an AK-47 and a Uzi and a Glock. They're terrorizing the community all day. But will we stand up and call them terrorists? No. Why? Because they're our sons, they're our nephews, they're our nieces, they're our brothers. But in all actuality, anytime people are scared to come out their house and go to the store, anytime people want to be in before the sun go down, anytime people hollering it's not safe, they are terrorized. And guess what? Terrorism is a form of trauma.
I like that. I agree with that.
Yeah, Kirby. Well, what would you say in regard to how we need to approach it, knowing that that is the kind of issue that we're up against more so, and not so much on, you know, the post effect, but we should be proactive in identifying these issues and knowing how to deal with them.
And I guess the best, I guess he said it best to deal with this. You have, once you recognize there's a problem, that's how you deal with it. And we all recognize this post-traumatic terrorism and everything that's going on in our community. The thing is, let's start dealing with it. Let's talk open and honestly. That's all these kids want, man. They don't want to be judged. They don't want to feel like they're being lectured. They need open dialogue. We need open dialogue, even as adults, because I think sometimes we think that, I think we all suffer from some type of trauma, and we forget. We look at the next one going through their trauma, like their trauma is even less, we diminish it. Like their trauma is less than our trauma, but we both suffer from trauma. No matter when you got the trauma, you still suffer from the trauma. So we try to work through it. But working through it is not helping these kids. It's not helping our community. We got to speak about it. You know, and it comes from this. This is where it comes from. What's said in the house stays in the house. That means all the crazy dysfunctional stuff that goes on in the house, that's where it stays at. So you know what happens later on? All that crazy dysfunctional stuff starts spilling out the door. And that's what we have. So the trauma is real, and we need to address it as real. We don't want to diminish anyone's trauma, whether it was a gunshot, whether it was abuse, whether it was sexually abused, physical abuse, or mental or emotional. We don't want to diminish that. We need to start talking openly and honest, because you can put all the cops in the world on these streets. That ain't going to get rid of the trauma that these kids in the community is dealing with. So...
I wanted to bring it home to really focus on where we are in our definition of the United for Peace effort, where we're dealing with the relationship of coming up with a strategy of delivering a method to make these changes occur. You know, we have often talked about it takes a village to raise a child, but it takes a network to create a change in our neighborhoods. And that network is now being established where we are identifying to a number of different effective methods in which we can approach this change that's needed. One of the real issues that we have interfaced with on a number of different fronts has been the area of the violence in our community being a medical problem. Can you tell me, Kirby, what area have been identified where the relationship of therapy is being applied as a solution to the problem?
Well, for many, there's no therapy. Therapy haven't been offered because people don't want to pay. Let's call it what it is. And then our people don't want to go to a therapist or anything because they feel, oh, I'm not crazy. I'm not going to see no therapist. It's sad. But I'm over. I do counseling on a regular. But I can't tell a person you crazy or you this or you that. And I wouldn't tell them that. I'm saying the number one thing we need to do is start talking. Because that's therapy right there. Therapy begins when you start healing. Healing begins when you start realizing what the core root of the issue is. So therapy is the same thing. So you gotta get to the roots of the problem. And people, I'm telling you, you will be surprised how many people want to let it out. They walking around here. They walking around here like time bombs. Can't wait to let all that garbage out so they can be finally healed.
And you know something else, sir? I'm going to go in that area. I'm going to go in that area, and I hope the 950 million listeners that's listening don't misconstrue what I'm saying. But I'm going to go in an area that intertwines with what your brother just said.
Mm-hmm.
You know, counseling and therapy is a major part, and a lot of our people need it. And they really need to know they need it. But the other part of it is medication.
Mm.
And how a lot of people are on medication. And the people are hard. Now, listen to, don't misconstrue what I'm saying, people. People are hard on the marijuana smoker. But the person who's popping all these pills every day that the doctor is prescribing for him. See, talk about the first of the month. Don't you know people go every first of the month to go get the same pills, medication that probably they don't need, but they're taking it and mixing it with all sorts of other medications and drugs and alcohol or whatever, and that causes them to go kind of crazy. And we're dealing with people every day, and if you check most of these people that they have arrested, the first thing they say is, well, they was off their medication, huh?
You know, that's really interesting to say that. Have there been any ways of being able to evaluate that as being a real major concern? Because, I mean, you really can identify to the fact that our communities are definitely over-medicated. If it isn't prescription drugs, that, you know, a number of our residents are being exposed to because they can't afford it, because health care is so expensive that they can't afford health care, so therefore the medical treatment that's needed is done underground. And in regard to, you know, many of the things that are going on today, whereas the controlled dangerous substances are being mutated, the mutations, you know, I mean, like there's no natural weed anymore.
Well, the deal is to show a lot of natural pills, because that's the first thing they're doing. Is they're prescribing these pills, man, and we're not, as a community, we're not focusing on how many of the women are on all sorts of different pills, how many of the guys is on all these different pills, and a lot of these pills are psychotropic. They're mind-altering pills. They're not nothing like for gastritis or, you know, people, you know, they take it some serious stuff.
You are
true to that.
You are so right.
Well, like I said, go ahead, Kirby.
We really need to take a closer look at that, too, because and it's so funny that you mentioned that, because in one of my counseling sessions, I had a guy. This is a Jew. This is a Jewish guy, right? And he said he's been taking medication since he was a little kid. What did his parents think he was going to do when he got older besides do drugs? To find something harsher or something to still stimulate him? And that's what we have out here. I was shocked because I never knew that you would get on medication at such a young age and it would have an effect growing up. So we do have a lot of people who was on, and back then, the drugs was more experimental than they are now because everyone has ADHD now. Everyone has the same clinical diagnosis and yes. the same medication for the same, hold on, so you're telling me because I'm hyperactive, I have ADHD, or because I learn a little quicker than others, I have ADHD. Because you're going to give me the same medication as you're going to get a guy who, he's angry about something. He's angry because he could have been abused, and you never know. So that is not, it's a business. It's a business.
It's a pharmaceutical. And see, unfortunately, the HIPAA Act does not allow you to get actively involved unless, you know, there are some restraints, you know, there's some authorizations that have to be approved in order for it to be done. But, you know, when we think about where these conditioning aspects, and remember we opened up with talking about conditioning and how conditioning has been a major problem of concern in regard to how people are effectively being exposed to a number of different things. You know, when they're watching TV, you know, they're watching crimes and how to get away with crimes. And what it looks like, you know, I would never want to know, but many of the things that you're talking about that individuals experienced for real in the war, Venizelos, now they're experiencing that right in their neighborhood. You know, they see a dead body with bullet holes in it, or somebody who got shot in the face on a TV show. You know, those are the dramatic issues that I'm talking about, how society within itself is being coaxed to believe that these are the things that we should be allowed to witness simply because of the fact that it is by popular demand.
Well,
because it's entertainment. It's a form of entertainment when you really think about it. Because we can go all the way back to some of the first black and white shows that we saw on TV with the shootout at the OK Corral. So this gunplay and all this shooting on the streets has been going on for years. These subliminal messages have been passed on for centuries now.
Exactly.
And also, I think, you know, when Superfly was out, Shaft was out, and all those black exploitation movies, you know, that people were banning because black folk were in leathers and had afros and had guns, huh? It was just, you know, we didn't go out and do the same thing we seen on the movie. And so I think a lot of it, again, goes back to mentality. And so a lot of our young people and a lot of some adults have to be able to distinguish between fake and reality. We're living in a world today where fake is real and real is fake. Everybody walking around with fake Gucci, fake Prada, fake Burberry, and that's cool. But now, real Burberry, a real Prada, a real Gucci, we can't afford that. So therefore, we settling for the fake. Well, in reality, we know that a lot of these shows are fake. But can our people distinguish between the fake and the reality? That's how Grand Theft Auto became so famous. See, I don't know if many of you remember Grand Theft Auto when it first came out. Was about stealing cars and, you know, riding fast. Now it's Grand Theft Auto Extreme, XXX and all that there. These cats ain't stealing just cars no more. They raping, robbing, shooting women, carjacking, murdering, and all of that, trying to get away from the police. And there's levels. So now the reality is today we have a lot of people who come out in the street and try to do the same level that they've done on Grand Theft Auto. Real talk.
Hey, you're listening to All Live Voices. We were from Black on Black Crime to Black Lives Matters, Who Really Cares? And we're with Minister Ellis, Thomas Ellis, and we're with Mr. Hassan Kirby. Really, guys, let's think about it. You know, 2006, when I could say that I started really getting protein about getting out here and talking about, that's why Black on Black was such a concern of mine, and now it's Black Lives Matter. But think about it. In 2006, the 10-year-old kid is now 20 years old, and what is he doing?
Well, what they see is what they'll be.
I agree.
You know, I mean, a decade has gone by since 2006. We're in 2016.
Yeah.
The kid that was 10 years old in 2006 is now 20 years old. And where is he?
Well, hopefully.
He is the one that's really providing these situations that, you know, are very discouraging. And if he's not in jail, sitting there, getting all of the prescription drugs that he needs, because he's literally laying on the floor. And, you know, Kirby, you get a test, you're there. There's no way in the world these guys are living a life of Raleigh. These
not at all.
Need something. I can't lay on the floor without needing about 3 or 4 leaves. So, I'm telling you, it's like it's a natural thing now for, you know, for people to have some kind of, existence of some medical chemistry in order to survive nowadays. You know, you have a lot of young ladies.
Herb, I'm going to say this, and I'm going to let Brother Kirby in probably. I'm going to step back. And I'm going to say this again. You know, we're in Black History Month. And again, let me say it like this here. Do you know that back in the 1800s, 1700s, 1600s, well, let's deal with the 1800s. Back in 1853, 1847, 1898, Black people were inventing stuff, man. These people were using their mind. They were looking to the future. Now, let's look at the future, 2016. The only thing that we pretty much are inventing is more problems. In every community across the city, it's basically the same thing. Huh? So it's not an isolated city incident. You go to California, where the Black folk live, poverty, poor education, violence. You go to Baltimore, poverty, poor education, violence. You go to Philly, poverty. So what we have to do, again, is get our people to see that you can be a doctor, a lawyer, a philanthropist, a brain surgeon, they don't think that no more. All they think about now is getting paid. Getting paid. That's it.
I guess it's said it better by myself.
Is that right? Why? I mean, it's getting paid, like the major emphasis. I mean, like, and you know, is it really about getting paid, or is it about survival? Is it about the fact that you really can't survive unless you have a certain level of income? If you don't have, and it's true, because, like, you know, here it is, we're struggling in many aspects, and if we don't have an opportunity to find some subsidy to survive, we're out here really pushing hard on trying to find out where that next nickel is coming from.
Yeah. But it reminds me of something I think we spoke about before. What Minister Ellis just shared was basically the 3 points that I spoke to you about before. How long ago I was in a lecture and the guy asked me a question. Well, he asked the whole group. He said, "What do you want to do with your life? Do you want to get by, get over, or get it all?" And no one, everybody, you know, we're young, we're full of energy and vigor. We all want to get it all. And getting it all means that you have to get over on the one that's trying to get by in life. And that's what's been happening with our community. You know, I don't care that you're from the church.
Brother Curry, I'm sorry. Are you outdoors?
Huh?
Are you outdoors in a car?
In the car at the moment, yeah, now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because we were hearing you in a distant way.
Oh, okay. Yes, I just got in the car because I'm going to have to get that cut off because I'm on my way to a group as we speak.
I got you.
Okay.
So it's good news, man. We really appreciate you taking the time to use the technology to give us your voice of concern in our online voices. And we want to make you a major part of this. We'll continue to keep you informed on when we're going to be on the air because we need your input. We certainly want to continue to monitor what you're doing because we want you to monitor what we're doing. And not only that, but we got to find a way in which we can get under the same roof to do the same thing together.
I really appreciate it. I join both of you once again. Thank you, Mr. Ellis. Thank you, Mr. Glenn.
Yes.
And I'll be signing off.
Hey,
sorry, my brother. Be careful, man.
Thank you for being on the show.
You're welcome.
Hey, Brother Herbert. A lot of information, as usual. Online voices. We're just giving people information and sharing a lot of what we have come to know. That's what I like to think, a lot of what we've come to know. And how do you come to know a lot of this is you have to be out there. You have to be involved. You have to be a part of. And the good thing is we are part of the solution versus part of the problem. And so anytime that we can have this show on Online Voices and we can help to inform people, that is a solution. We all know the problem.
I agree. You're right. And not only that, I think that what we have been able to accomplish in putting together this show is to share with our listeners the way in which we want to approach finding that solution. I'm very proud to say that this weekend I was really intense with building a strong bond with the United States Tennis Association and met many of the individuals on the higher echelon of the funding programming and development in regard to the national agenda in relationship to the mission of the USTA and wanted to grow tennis in many ways. And tennis itself is a very good example of what can be our solution when it comes down to many of the things that have been the key aspects of where our problems actually exist. I wanted to go over a little bit of what has happened in the last few hours in regard to what the needs of most children are and how we are going to begin to meet them. We are now going to expand the two-hour tennis program into a full-blown learning and technology project. We're going to be now working out of the Westside Salvation Army. So this weekend, Minister Ellis, we definitely have to make sure that the parents who are participating in our program are aware that we are going to be changing locations because we now have the ability to utilize the gym for an entire 8-hour period. We're going to be there from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. And within it, we are going to develop a life learning curriculum and also offer, the sport of passion and productivity to what it is that we're trying to do, which is the sport of tennis. What we have been able to find is that there is a growing need for more than just talk, if you will. We have a lot of institutions that have been created, but those institutions that have been created have pretty much been the traditional programming. We have to do something different. And so we want to look ahead and begin to build the kind of activities that are going to be vital towards developing that discipline that we need in our community. And we're very happy that you're a part of it. And, you know, we're looking at ways in which we can provide a better level of discipline so that we can get the ability to be confident and fit the desire of many people that have been part of our programming. So how do we challenge those ideas that we just spoke about on the air, Minister Ellis?
Well, first, and I'm glad we're talking tenants. You know, that's a great piece that you and myself have been involved in and really educating the young people on the sport of tennis, and even more than that, for many, introducing them to tennis for the first time, something that will probably last with them for the rest of their life. But the other thing is, you know, this is a we're in technology now and blog radio and internet service. And so I wanted to just clear the air. Is it true that Serena seen you in the stands at the match? And when she seen you sitting in the stands, she just could never pull herself back together.
I, you know, have to tell you, we were so overwhelmed with the way in which we were interacting over finding resources for our program that we hadn't even learned that Serena didn't win the Australian Open until yesterday. And I think she lost the Open on Saturday, right?
Yeah, early Saturday morning.
I haven't had it. I can understand. You know, it's funny.
I thought
let me tell you something. One of the issues that we were talking about, and, you know, okay, we can work with that, but what they're saying that in the last 5 years, fewer kids are active through sports, and what is part of it is the early single sport specialization. And even though we know the Williams girls did not really do any league tennis training, they went straight into the pro set without having the burden of having to compete early in life. But the tremendous amount of pressure that she has been going through as a winner is beginning to find a presence of need. And that need is for her to have some real sense of therapy, because there is an issue of mental competence that can be really challenged when you get to that level she has been. And it is very difficult, and I'm sure she's going through a lot after losing the Grand Slam opportunity to be the history maker. And now coming out in her first Grand Slam and losing it, you know, you can imagine what kind of pressure that you need to them in. And we want to pray for her, and we certainly want to be supportive to whatever it is that can help her improve her level of confidence, you know, at her age. Because it could be possible, man, that it's time to let it go.
Well, and that's the point I was just getting ready to hit on. Guess what, Doc? Everybody in any sport or anything, once you reach the top, you can't go no higher, all right? No matter what it is, it's in business. If you created a business from the ground and now your business is a $4 billion industry, you can't go no higher. You got to know, you know, Kenny Rogers saying it best, you got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them. And so once you reach the top, you got to go out on top. Otherwise, you're going to be losing, and guess what? People never remember who came in second. I bet you couldn't tell me who came in second in last year's Super Bowl.
Well, not only that, but look at what happened with Tiger Woods. You know, golf became golf because of Tiger Woods.
So
nobody really.
On top.
You know, but you think about it. You know, these young athletes with this tremendous amount of pressure that they have to be super gods, and then you have people who are just wishing and hoping that they don't. And so, you know, you got to remember that they are not robots. And there is a point that there is a break point in everybody's life, and we want to give them all, you know, a tremendous amount of appreciation for what they've done and what they're continuing to do, and we are using them as role models to help influence another generation of winners, and we hope pretty much for America that we can really help to build that kind of a warrior, as you were indicating earlier, that will recognize the importance as it is to our community. And we want to do whatever we can to help to deliver that kind of support. And that's the reason why we are very in touch with what's going on with the United States Tennis Association, and why we are incredibly happy about the relationship that we're building. And not only that, but the type of educational resources that we have been able to work with. We're going to be working with the Mindfulness Group, and they're a group of individuals who have been able to use scientific theory to be able to get in touch with the minds of people, young and old, and help them overcome a lot of obstacles when it comes down to their confidence and their competency. And we're hoping that that will be a major area of resource once we begin to start getting to the level of competition with our kids in our tennis program. You know, we have a beginners program, and we're fortunate this year that we're going to begin to start a league come this April. And we want to begin to look at ways in which we can make sure that the kids that are part of our program will get a lot of resources in order for us to make a tremendous impact on the industry as we move forward.
Now, all what you just said, in a nutshell, for our community, or even for the city, or even for Essex County, all what you just said is definitely a positive alternative to guns and violence. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
A positive
Absolutely.
Alternative. And that's what we have to get more people involved in, positive alternatives. So if we can sit down and create a tennis little project and then it expands, I'm quite sure there's other people, like I said earlier, who've been to college, Harvard, Yale, and Princeton, and Morehouse, or whatever. They have the knowledge. Bring it back. Share it. Help create something in these communities. We're not asking for money. These children, I'll say this here, these children in the city, many of them don't understand the money aspect of what we like to use when we're talking programming. All they understand is come in and do something for me. Help me. Come in and share some knowledge. Come in and teach me a sport. Come in and help me with my homework. They don't understand the fact that there's no funding to create a tennis program, or there's no grants available for baseball, or there's no money available to teach painting. They don't understand that. So the people who, you know, the best resource is you. I know I sound like I'm campaigning now, but the best resource is you. You are the best resource. So if you have the knowledge, if you have the wherewithal, if you have the skill, if you have the art, if you have the craft, you go and share it with others, and other people will get involved, and that's how you begin to get funding or grants or whatever you're looking for. But the number one resource is you. And we have to get the people to understand that in the community. Because there's somebody in the community right now sitting at home, and they have solutions to many problems that faces their community. But they're sitting back waiting for doggone money. But if they give me money, I tell them how to do this here. But we are past that now. We have to be in the mode where I got the knowledge. I see my people dying. I see my people hungry. I see my people hurting. I'm going to go out there and do what I can to help my people, whether I get money or not.
That's really a wonderful thing that you just said, because it's true. There are people who do withhold back on what they can be able to contribute to the community. And I think that's what makes us, a cut from the cloth, a step above. And while we're willing to motivate others to be the same way, we are going to be offering opportunities for you to interact, who may be a part of that mindset that feels that it's not a good idea to get involved because there is no compensation. Compensation will come. It was very difficult as we were trying to develop these kinds of relationships in our community alone. We can't do it alone. We need help. And you will be really given all of the resources that you need in order to be able to help build a different generation of leadership in our community. And we're inviting you to come join We Care Partners every Saturday at the West Side Salvation Army at 699 Springfield Avenue. And we're going to be looking at ways in which we want to create the We Care Partners Tennis and Education Learning Academy. And from that development, we are going to be developing ways of challenging the obstacles that are in our way as we move forward towards looking at how we can end this real major problem of domestic violence that has really become part of the worst case scenario in our communities. You know, Minister Ellis, very happy and thankful that you did have the time to spend with us this evening. We want to continue to make a presence. I have to apologize for the technical glitch this session, but we'll do what we can to improve upon that as we move forward with our technology. What do you have to say in parting, Ms. Ellis?
Well, I'll say this in parting. The change comes from within, and you have to want change. Now, some people go to the store and they holler, "Can I get change for a dollar?" And the man may give you back 4 quarters. He may give you back 10 dimes. He may give you back 20 nickels. That's not the type of change that we need. We need change of heart, change of mind. And most of all, we need to change our direction and get on a good foot, as my man James Brown used to say.
You know, that's very inspiring, and we want to continue to encourage people to know that those are the things that are necessary for our change to occur. You know, we have to take our past and be able to realize our present so that we can understand what a future really is, because, you know, the only way that there is going to be a future, we are going to have to be able to create it. And if we're going to be able to create those futures, we need to be able to do it together. Together, we can all make the difference. And that has been the substantial product of what is going to be encouraging about what we have in our, you know, midst to be able to develop. You know, government can't do it alone. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, 100%. We need everybody, every hand, every arm, every leg, holding together, standing together, and fighting together.
And that's what's going to be important about what we're doing, and we're going to appreciate you. Again, we're going to be running our Community Academy out of the Westside Salvation Army at 699 Springfield Avenue. If you have any questions, any concerns, any issues, well, we're going to be in need of you bringing your children to be a part of our community outreach program. And we'll offer what services that we can to help you with in any need, whether it's domestic violence or you're having a problem with, you know, your living conditions or you need food to eat. We're at the central hub of one of our vital institutions that can help resolve some of those problems. So we're inviting you to come on out, be a part of this new movement that we are creating. We're going to create a middle-class movement that's going to initiate a method in which everyone can be a part of and look at what we can do as a network so that we can not only change our village, but a better community for us all. Mr. Ellis, I think you have said it all. I think I've said it all. I think it's a great opportunity for us to say goodnight.
No. You said it all. You said food to eat. Good night.
I want to thank you for listening in, and I would look forward to you being another part of the experience of the Online Voices. Have a good night. And always remember, together we can all make the difference. Let's go to work. Good night, Brother Ellis.
Hey, I'll let you.